This is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry in for Tanzina Vega.
Here comes Shaqiri! Richardson's going to Tokyo! 1087!
And we're listening to the moment when 21-year-old Shaqiri Richardson won the women's 100-meter race at the U.S. track and field trials last month. Her emotions were intense.
Unbelievable. The fact that I am an Olympian, no matter what is said or anything, I am an Olympian. A dream since I've been young.
Richardson's dream ended abruptly last week after she tested positive for marijuana, was banned from competition for 30 days, and was not added to the roster of athletes who will compete in the Olympics this month. She made no excuses, but the heartbreak was evident.
I want to take responsibility for my actions. I know what I did. I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm allowed not to do, and I still made that decision.
Here's how President Biden responded when he was asked about the fairness of banning Richardson from Olympic competition.
It's the rules are the rules, and everybody knows that the rules we're going in. Whether they should remain that should remain the rules, a different issue.
The rules are the rules, and everybody knew the rules going in, but did we? Nearly a decade before Richardson was born, Bill Clinton was elected president, just months after saying this.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
The year Richardson was born, George W. Bush was elected president.
I didn't behave that well when I was younger.
Yeah.
And, like I might have smoked some, for example.
When Richardson was in high school, President Bush's big brother, Governor Jeb Bush, ran for president as a Republican.
So 40 years ago, I smoked marijuana, and I admit it. I'm sure that other people might have done it and may not want to say it in front of 25 million people. My mom's not happy that I just did.
And that same year, Senator Bernie Sanders ran for the Democratic presidential nomination.
You know, I smoked marijuana a couple of times. Didn't do much for me.
During the years when Richardson was in second grade until she was a high school junior, President Obama lived in the White House.
I like Bernie. Bernie's an interesting guy. Apparently, some folks really want to see a pot-smoking socialist in the White House. We could get a third Obama term after all.
Last year, when Richardson was still just 20 years old, America elected its first black woman vice president, Kamala Harris.
Have you ever smoked?
I have.
Okay.
Like in college, I inhale. I did inhale. It was a long time ago.
Now, don't misunderstand me. This is not a finger-wagging respectability diatribe. I'm not here to rail against elected officials setting a bad example and corrupting America's youth. I'm here to ask a question because I'm genuinely curious. When President Biden says,
"The rules are the rules, and everybody knows that the rules we're going in."
See, I'm left asking, what are the rules that we all know? For Shaqiri Richardson's entire life, marijuana has posed no barrier to representing the nation at its highest and most visible level. Democrats and Republicans, black and white, men and a woman, all have disclosed their dalliance with weed and been met with laughter, applause, a wink of recognition, a nod of knowing. For Richardson, it seems the rules are different.
When you stand just 5 feet, 1 inch tall, you get told your entire life what you cannot do. That chip on her shoulder is because every time she's been told that, she's been able to overcome those odds and get it done. The United States women have not won the Olympic gold in this event since 1996. So it's going to take somebody who is audacious and bold and brash to get the United States back on the top.
And we're listening to some analysis offered by an NBC sports announcer at the Olympic trials in June. Just weeks later, Richardson's bold, brash, audacious willingness to get it done and overcome all odds was being denigrated rather than celebrated. It turned out that in order to overcome the emotional devastation of losing her mother and the tremendous pressure of the Olympic trials, Richardson needed a little weed to take the edge off. Now, recreational marijuana is legal in 19 states, D.C. and Guam, but it remains a banned substance for Olympic athletes. Do the rules need to change for Olympians? Do the laws need to change for everyone? Are the barriers medical, political, cultural? Why do we openly pop bottles of champagne after a hard-earned victory, but clutch our pearls at the thought of puffing and passing to celebrate a win? For more on this, I'm now joined by Professor Amira Rose Davis, Assistant Professor of History and African American Studies at Penn State University. She's also co-host of the podcast Burn It All Down. Welcome, Amira.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
And Jason Williamson, the Executive Director of the Center on Race, Inequality, and Law at NYU Law School. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Thank you both for being here. Amira, I want to start with you. I want to just take one more beat and listen to something that Sha'Carri said.
Don't judge me because I am human. I'm you. I just happen to run a little faster.
So she has taken full responsibility. She has, you know, but she is in that moment saying, please don't judge me. Can you weigh in on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think her tweet, I am human, speaks so voluminous because the lack of empathy for the reasoning that she's bringing to the table for what she's saying, right? I found out that my mother passed away. And that is grief. That is pain. And if you only can see me as a one-dimensional athlete and you can't see the rest of this, right, including mistakes or decisions or reasons behind decisions, then you're not seeing my full humanity. And I think it echoes and reverberates at a time where other Black women athletes are saying the same thing. You're not seeing me as fully human. Why am I needing to, you know, completely perform all of my traumas to get anybody to care? And if that means I mess up or break a rule or whatever, I'm accepting of that because this is all me. And I think that is what she's insisting upon over and over and over again since this has come out, that I'm human above all else, and this is the decision I made, and this is my grief that nobody seems to want to actually account for.
So, Jason, I want to build on that because I'm wondering if it's even necessary to go to a place of grief, of mistakes, of distress, although certainly that is at the core of how Sha'Carri is talking about this herself. But I mean, as we talked about kind of at the front of all this, I mean, people just smoke weed because, well, people smoke weed in the same ways that you know, folks have a beer after a long run. I'm just wondering about whether what's going on here is a sort of requirement for a higher level of moral, you know, sort of moral reasoning.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think so. First of all, I just want to agree with both you and Professor Davis that, you know, I think Sha'Carri has handled this situation with tremendous grace in a very difficult situation. So I give her all the credit in the world. And it's really all of us who are having conversations about whether or not this is fair. But I mean, the truth is that this is not happening in a vacuum, right? This is, yes, in some ways about Sha'Carri, but it's also happening in the context of a significant shift in public opinion about marijuana, or at least what people are willing to share in public about their feelings around marijuana. As you mentioned in your opening, 19 states have now legalized the marijuana. And so I think people understanding that and kind of seeing this shift in the way that people are thinking and talking about it, there's a dissonance between that and now punishing this athlete and not allowing her to achieve her goal. And I also think, you know, President Biden mentioned that rules are rules, and sure, I suppose that's true, just like laws are laws. The problem is that those laws, including and in particular marijuana laws, have not been historically enforced in a proportionate way, right? They're being enforced disproportionately in communities of color, even though the law is supposed to apply evenly to everyone. And as you said, Black, white, brown, yellow, a bunch of people are smoking on a daily basis and not feeling the same consequences as Black and brown folks, particularly in low-income neighborhoods.
So let me come to you, Amira, on exactly that point. Should we be thinking about the world of sport quite differently, you know, relative to this sort of war on drugs? Is this is this question less about race and the inequities of the war on drugs and more just about the Olympics being a special set aside space?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's completely intertwined, right? So when you talk about the Clinton administration, you talk about the war on drugs, one of the things that they really targeted in the late 90s was pushing for marijuana to be part of this comprehensive anti-drug program that they wanted the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, to adapt. And part of that was through this idea that like athletes had to be role models. And while they're saying athletes, and that's like all athletes, yes, specifically when you're talking about the way the United States exports Black athletic labor, there is certainly a racialized element to it in demanding and over-policing weed, drugs, regardless of it's at the Olympic level or in LA or in New York or wherever. And so I don't think we can actually disentangle the two. But certainly this kind of romanticism about the Olympics is tied up in making it feel like this special drug-free space.
So talking about this dynamic where Black women like Sha'Carri and even Naomi Osaka, who we talked about earlier in the summer, are talking about taking care of themselves. Is that a kind of revolutionary moment?
Yeah, I think that their staying power in the way that it is happening all together and kind of building and keeping the conversation front and center is really important. I feel like when we talked about Naomi a few weeks ago, it was sense like, okay, now the subject could kind of move on. But when people like Sha'Carri are continuing to add to it, when Gwen is adding to it, when Anna Cockrell, when Breonna McNeil, when all these Black women athletes are saying, here is my mental health and it matters. When Simone Manuel says, it's been a burden to be a Black woman this past year and overtraining and the stress of the Olympics, and that's why I took time away from the pool, that matters to say publicly. And I think that it is inspiring and creating a kind of larger space for this consideration of not just Black women's mental health, but mental health for all athletes, and not just athletes who are Black women, but Black women in general, right? Therapy for Black girls is part of this fuller, robust conversation happening around mental health needs. And I think that Black women are absolutely pushing that forward in whatever self-care may look like, whether it's absence, whether it like Naomi, whether it's insisting on kind of full humanity, whether it's other forms of self-care that they're leaning into quite publicly. I think it's definitely a kind of new, refreshing, much louder conversation than it's been before.
So Jason, I want to continue to follow up on this kind of self-care aspect. And I don't want to suggest that the use of controlled substances, you know, whether we're talking about too many glasses of wine in the evening or whether, you know, we're talking about the use of marijuana or vaping or any of those things, whether legal or illegal. But I am interested in whether or not in this moment, this sort of leadership about that need to care for ourselves and the fact that some of us do kind of rest in a little bit to some substances to help us feel better. Is this a way to maybe break through some of this anxiety, kind of cultural anxiety we have about marijuana use?
I hope so. And I think Black women athletes in particular should be applauded for the leadership that they're showing in that regard. And I think part of why the conversation is louder, as Professor Davis noted, is that you have prominent female athletes, Black women, speaking out publicly about all of this and insisting on taking time out to take care of themselves, whatever that may look like. And then I think you see a cultural shift that we talked about earlier that has led to so many states starting to legalize not just medical marijuana, but recreational marijuana as well. And not just in places like California or Colorado or Oregon, where the argument has largely been about, you know, the freedom to put things in our bodies without the government telling us what to do, but also now in places like New York and New Jersey and Washington, D.C., where it's one, more conversation about racial justice and the need to take a more fair and balanced approach to marijuana and marijuana enforcement and so on, and changing the way that we think about these things. As President Biden mentioned, you know, he said sort of in a throwaway line that not only that rules are rules, but that there's a separate question about whether those rules should remain in place. And I think that's precisely the conversation that we need to make sure we have. There's no question that Black women athletes speaking out about this is doing a lot to push that ball forward.
Although, Jason, it's worth pointing out that it's hard to kind of take care of yourself if you are incarcerated as a result of older marijuana laws, right, sort of before the shift began to happen. Or even if you're no longer incarcerated, you know, if you can't benefit from those changing laws, right, economically, fiscally, because you have this, you know, prior arrest and incarceration. If we're really talking about folks being able to take care of themselves, how can we also shift those laws so that as states begin to open up, everybody has a right to enter into that marketplace?
Well, I think that's exactly right. And that's why the framing of the issue in places like Washington, D.C. Was really about ensuring not only that we're going to destigmatize and decriminalize the use of marijuana, but also that we're going to allow people and communities of color who have been burdened by this for so many years to benefit from the change in the law, either as participants in the market or at the very least being able to enjoy the law itself without being harassed by the police. You know, it is true that even in states where marijuana has been decriminalized, such that, you know, people aren't being arrested for it, but are just being cited, you still have Black and brown folks being cited more often than white people in those jurisdictions. So, those inequities still exist, and we have a long way to go, to your point. But my hope is that as we're talking about this in a different way, that people will start to understand the equity issues in allowing people to feel the full benefit of this cultural shift.
So, Amir, it feels to me like that over-policing of Black folk, of poor folk, of Latino folks is precisely related to this desire to discredit, right, Sha'Carri, not only on the question, the fact that she did use marijuana, but also these other ways to discredit her. What have we been seeing on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's important to note on the vote Jason just made about these laws and the length of time it takes to, you know, actually have that felt on the ground. It's oftentimes too little too late, whether you're talking about people who are incarcerated while people are making absolute bank on, you know, marijuana industries, or you're talking about athletes like Sha'Carri, right, where in many other sports we've seen a relaxation of weed, whether they're changing the amount that they're testing for or the last CBA for the NBA, for instance, they're not going to do random drug tests. We've seen it relaxed in other areas. I think that we talked about the Olympics as this kind of special little space that has had made it more durable there. But I think that you also see this kind of throwing up of a hands, right, where it's like, oh, we can't do anything about this, when that's actually not true. And I think that when you read that in, right, the decision to keep her off the 4x100 team, for instance, where the statement that was put out was that they empathize with her and they want to support her, but they also feel like everybody abided by the rules, and because she didn't, she is not eligible for the relay pool, and that they can't bend the rules to accommodate her. And my question would be, well, what rule would they thinking they're going to bend? Because the rule states a 30-day suspension, which she would have served. The rules discredit her 100-meter semi and final, but that has nothing to do with the relay pool. In fact, that's been a place of discretion. That's been a place where people have been able to appoint people who are dealing with grief and maybe did not put up good times, who had maybe an injury but would be good. We've seen this kind of discretion go in favor of other athletes many times. And so I think that, for instance, feels like one of these curious over-policing, over-scrutinized decisions that continues this kind of stigma that really layers it on, when there was other decisions that could be made. And when you add that into this larger conversation, whether it's about Black women, especially from the Global South, being tested and scrutinized around their chromosomes, think Caster, right? We've seen at least three other athletes barred from the Olympics this cycle as well. When you're talking about the Afro swim cap, the soul cap, when you're talking about things like Simone Biles, right, who has her gymnastic federation intentionally scoring her events lower because they don't want to encourage other people to do them. This idea that Black women athletes in particular are still the site that can be over-scrutinized or policed or stigmatized or whatever, they're very visible symbols, but and yet in many ways, they get made into two-dimensional things that get wielded as battering rams in these kind of cultural debates. And that's why I return to what Sha'Carri said, I am human. And one of the things that I think they are very clear at, whether they're talking about mental health or protesting or whatever, is that you need to see us as fully human so we can actually see how we're still impacted by these institutions, even if the discourse is changing around us, even if it looks like change on the horizon. If it's not being felt by us yet, we're very much the canary in the minefield. And there is still some work to be done.
Amira Rose Davis is an assistant professor of history and African-American studies at Penn State University, also co-host of the podcast Burn It All Down. Jason Williamson is the executive director of the Center on Race, Inequality, and the Law at NYU Law School. Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Melissa.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.